Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Hemlane Hustle. I am so excited for our guest today, as I know you guys will be as well. Welcome, Adam Carroll, to the show.
Hey Dana, how are you?
I am great. I'm very excited about our conversation today, which is going to be on the shred method, in part because our listeners here are probably looking at what do I do from a debt versus equity perspective? How do I invest more in real estate? What should I be doing from the perspective of looking at how much should I have in my mortgage? And you are an expert to talk about the shred method, getting rid of debt, thinking about your future, but also strategically doing it. From the perspective of how do you make sure that you can have your money work for you. And one of the coolest things I think is that you started the first socially responsible mortgage company as well. So before we get started in talking about the shred method, I'd love for you just get to give listeners a quick overview of your background.
Yes, happy to do it. I was a debt statistic when I started, Dana. So I graduated from college, had, fairly decent sized student loan debt. I had 8 grand in credit card debt that I'm sure was mostly spent at the bars, being like, hey, this one's on me, I had a lot of friends who were like, I'll get the next round kind of guys. And
Oh gosh.
so I ended up college kind of a debt statistic, but met a woman my senior year in college who gave me some great advice. She said, get rid of your debt or I'm going to get rid of you. And I was like, oh, dang, that's harsh. And then I looked at her scenario versus mine. I was like, maybe she knows what she's talking about. And so she is now my wife, has been
I was
for
gonna say, did
24
you marry
years.
her?
Yeah, I
Okay,
married
great.
her.
Smart decision.
Smartest decision I'd ever made. And in the midst of all of that, we figured out how to blast away debt. And I was really in the pursuit of the mastery of money. I had gotten basically some advice from an advisor, a mentor that I met early on in my 20s. And he said, all of us should be pursuing mastery of something. So choose today, what do you want to pursue mastery in? And I was like, well, mastery of money sounds pretty good. I'm going to pursue mastery of money. And his kind of guidance for me was the pursuit of mastery is like climbing a mountain that has no peak. So you're always growing, you're always learning. And the higher you get, the more you realize how much you have to learn. And so for me, I've been on this like perpetual quest to learn more and more about every facet of money, from investing in real estate and options and businesses to how do we manage and mitigate debt and risk. And I've tried to teach that along the way. So I've been on probably 750 different college campuses as a guest lecturer. I've got a couple of TED Talks under my belt, a documentary on student loan debt that aired on CNBC. So I've done a ton, and now I'm really focused on this software product and game and strategy that we use that's all about helping people essentially build a bigger life and not a bigger lifestyle.
Great. So let's talk about just the shred method in general. So tell me a little bit more about good debt, bad debt. Is all debt bad?
Yeah.
Mortgages, all of that. Walk me through kind of how you think about someone's own personal financial planning.
Yeah, I love this question because the good debt, bad debt question always comes up. Is my mortgage good? Is my student loan good? I maintain that good debt puts money in your pocket. So if you've taken out debt on a business, you've taken out on real estate, commercial real estate, or a single family residence or multifamily properties, that's all to me good debt. I have no problem looking at someone's financial picture and seeing a bunch of leverage that's helping them get where they want to go financially. What I struggle with with people is when I look at their financial picture and there's tons of car loans, credit card debt, consumer debt. They may be carrying a big mortgage, and it's not that the mortgage is bad debt necessarily. But I think that we have sort of conflated the idea of our house being our greatest asset. And then we just make the minimum mortgage payment because what we're effectively doing is playing the bank's game. And when we play the bank's game, the bank wins. And this is kind of like central to the shred method, is I learned years ago, the bank always wins, particularly when we're playing their game with them. Does that make sense?
And wait, back that up. So how does the bank win and how do you lose if you have, let's just say, your primary residence? So to your point, a lot of people think of their primary residence as their primary asset. And they don't invest in real estate, and they actually invest in that kitchen remodel and all these different things associated with their own home. Totally. And so walk me through that, how you think about that. And, you know, when someone's locked into like a 3% interest rate, why wouldn't they want to pay that? Or why wouldn't they want to just let that go for as long as possible? Because 3% is so artificially low. Tell me a little bit more.
Great question. And central to this, obviously, you mentioned I had started the first socially responsible mortgage company way back when. And our motto basically was we wanted to put people in a better position financially when they were done with us than when they started with us. So we would, in effect, sort of refinance people's finances to help them either save more, invest more, or have more discretionary income. And, you know, through the years of working in that industry, Dana, what I realized was every time someone refinanced their house, they would reset the clock to zero and the bank would start making massive amounts of interest on them. And so we have to first understand how an amortization table or a mortgage technically works, which is from a visual perspective, if you put a traffic light over the top of your mortgage, the first 10 years are red light, meaning the majority of your payment goes to interest. The second 10 years are yellow light. A little bit goes to principal, a little bit goes to interest. And then the last 10 years are green light, where the majority of your principal pay down happens. And the challenge with this is that most people will stay in a home. Do you know how long? What the average 10 years
is? It like 7 or 8 years?
Yeah, it's seven. As of like 3 years ago, 4 years ago, it was 5.5 years. And I think part of this artificially low interest rate that you mentioned, which, you know, candidly was a byproduct of COVID and the economy shrinking, and, you know, basically the government saying, we got to like crank up the printing presses, lower interest rates. We need people buying homes and putting stuff in their home. We need to keep the economy afloat. So they're staying a little bit longer because they're emotionally attached to their interest rate, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm at 2.875. I love it. I'm emotionally attached to the house that we're in and the interest rate we're in. But that being said, I also know that even on a 3% interest rate, the majority of the initial payments are going towards interest. And so what the shred method does is it takes advantage of that knowledge and the knowledge that the majority of people's income is relatively inefficient. So like when we make money as an employee or as a business owner, money goes into checking. And I'm just going to throw this back to you, Dana. When you get paid, does money sit in your checking account for days or weeks or months on end?
No, I mean, people go on Amazon and go buy something, or I went on Wayfair and I bought a new fridge yesterday. Nice. So yes.
So it goes away very quickly.
So it goes away. Yes.
The majority of folks out there would say, yeah, you know, I have money sitting in checking for a couple weeks or a month. You know, we have money in savings if it's like long-term emergency funds. And some of that I just started to question years ago of this whole idea, everyone needs 6 to 12 months worth of living expenses in the bank. From my perspective, now every situation is different and personal finance should be personal for a reason. But there are some folks out there that to keep 12 months worth of living expenses in the bank, I want to ask the question, what kind of calamity would have to happen that would have you needing 12 months of liquidity in order to survive? So we started questioning, is there a difference between available money and accessible money? Mm-hmm. So available money is sitting in savings, money market accounts. It's liquid. You could go to the bank, pull it out, count it every day if you wanted to. Like, you know, there was a period of time we had money in the safe. I'd pull it out every month and count it just to feel good about it, right? That's available money. Then there is accessible money, which within 2 or 3 or 5 days, you could have some amount of money available to you to cover whatever kind of necessities you have. And the logic behind that for me is I know how to go make money. If I needed to go make $5,000 or $10,000, I could go do that. And I would hope that folks out there listening to your show would know I need to go either, in my case, it's like sell a speaking gig, sell consulting services, find subscribers for Shred, whatever it may be. We know how to go do that. And so understanding this idea between available funds and accessible funds is also kind of at the heart of the Shred method.
Okay, great. But then, so how do you think about that? Like most listeners probably have purchased something in the past 12 years where they got, and I will push this back 2 years, where they got 3% interest rate.
Yep.
And so are you saying that we should change our strategy? Because our strategy right now is like, don't pay this off sooner than you need to.
Yeah.
Because this 3% we're never getting again in this market. And so on anything else, it's better to put any money you would have put into that 3% into a higher down payment on an investment property or something like that. Yeah. But are you saying it's the opposite? Are you saying that we should be paying off those 3% mortgages that we have on our primary residence?
So this is an interesting distinction, because paying off versus paying down is sort of the question. For investors that I talk to, you know, a lot of them, they are really centered on, my interest rate's so low, why would I ever do this? All of my extra funds goes somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
But generally speaking, if I ask them, if you had an extra $15,000 or $20,000 or $40,000 a year, would that make a difference to your investing? And, you know, 9 times out of 10, they're like, absolutely it would. And I'd say, what if you had that 15 or 20 grand, 30, 40 grand, whatever it might be, available to you? All we had to do is reorient how the cash flow goes through your household so that your principal mortgage balance goes down. But what we're ultimately doing is freeing up liquidity for you to be able to disposition that somewhere else. And what we're doing effectively is sending less and less money to the bank as interest. And we're sending more and more to build our net worth or our liquidity, so we can then reposition or disposition that into an investment.
Okay, and, but how do you do that?
Yeah. So the way the Shred method works, and I'm going to use a couple of technical terms, which usually has people's eyes glaze over, but we're using interest rate arbitrage to a certain extent. So as an example, would you, if I were to loan you $100, Dana, and I charged you $5 in simple interest, but you knew it would save you $2,000 in interest, would you do that deal? Would you pay $5 to borrow $100 to save $2,000?
Well, to save $2,000, absolutely. That's a no-brainer. Yeah.
So we do this on a month-by-month basis, sometimes twice a month. We'll borrow in a short burst from a line of credit. Our income fills that line of credit back in, but what we've borrowed against it, we're putting against some of our outstanding debts to increase the liquidity, to decrease the amount of interest we're paying to a bank. And ultimately we're playing this interest rate arbitrage game where we're paying $5 in simple interest to borrow $100 to save $2,000. And what ends up happening is, for our investor clients, as an example, they are paying off or paying down their properties super quick. Like we have a guy, just yesterday I was working with a client. He has probably somewhere between 70 and 75 doors. He's got probably 65 mortgages totaling around $4 million and about $100,000 a month coming in gross. And, you know, I said, what would be a win for you? And he's like, oh gosh, if I mean, 15 years, 17 years from now, I pay these off, that'd be amazing. And I said, just based on the flow that's going through your business account and using a line of credit against this, his payoff period was 5.8 years and he would end up saving, like, I think it was $1.8 million in interest. His net worth would grow to about $28 million over the same 20 to 25 year payoff period that he would normally be in. And he would own about $12 million worth of real estate. So this is the power of this. It's like shifting traditional logic on its head a little bit.
Yeah.
And realizing that you can play the bank's game against the bank.
Think. So this is interest rate arbitrage makes complete sense to me. Is this what you call recasting?
Recasting is a little bit different in that it's a component for sure. But going back to your comment about paying off versus paying down. So, you know, if someone has a $1 million mortgage, and let's say their house payment on that with taxes and insurance is like 7 grand a month, okay? With a 3% rate, it might be more like 5,500 or 6 grand a month, but it's not insignificant. Let's put it that way. If through Shred, not, you know, you, this is not a beans and rice and beans kind of diet thing. We're not changing our lifestyle. You're just reorienting how your cash flow is going through your household so that it first stops in that line of credit, and we deploy whatever, you know, quote unquote, extra funds might be there for a period of time into the mortgage to bring the balance down. But if someone paid their $1 million mortgage down to 600,000 or 500,000, let's say, and that might take 36 months as an example, just based on what someone would have to be making to afford a $1 million home, right? $1 million mortgage. If they paid it down to 500,000, a recast basically says, I owed $1 million on a 30-year fixed at 3%, and my payment was $6,500 a month. What would my payment be at 500,000 on 27 years at 3%? And the minimum payment would end up being somewhere around 3 grand, 29, 2800, somewhere in there, right?
Okay.
So what we're doing is we're effectively just decreasing what our monthly spend is, increasing our discretionary income, which increases the amount that we can use to shred with at any given point in time.
Gotcha. Okay,
Yeah.
that makes complete sense.
Yeah.
And so walk me through a little bit more about who this method is best for. Is it those who
Yeah.
have credit card debt, student debt? Is it for everyone out there? Walk me through who should be looking to use these strategies, everything from recasting to interest rate arbitrage. Who is this best for?
Yeah, great question. So, at the heart of what we're doing, I maintain, is we are trying to create certainty in retirement. And right
Okay.
now, I would say you could, I'm sure you would agree, Dana, not to put words in your mouth here, but for a majority of Americans, retirement is very uncertain. And usually that is a byproduct of either not having saved enough, or my expenses are too big going into retirement and I'm not going to make enough money in retirement to cover all my expenses, right? So starting with this idea that we want to make retirement a certainty, one of the things that Shred does is we're working with people who will say, I really want to retire early. I have discretionary income, and that discretionary income could be 500 a month, it could be 5,000 a month, it could be 20,000 a month. But if you have more money at the end of your month, this will work for you, no question. If you have more month at the end of your money, this is not for you. You know what I mean? Like, not for the person that overspends their income and is using credit cards to supplement their income, not for them at all. But if somebody's saying, I know there's a different way, there's probably a smarter way, more efficient way of me using what I'm making, we love working with those people. So that could be someone who just has a primary residence and a few debts like car loans and credit cards. It could be somebody that has somewhere between one and five properties, and maybe they don't want to build a massive, a massive portfolio of rentals, but they do want to start taking full advantage of the extra discretionary income they have. We'll show them strategically how and when do we pay these down and to what level, where it's like, okay, now you're just making more for every tenant that you put in a building, you're just making more and more profit on those tenants.
How do you think about
Yeah.
that with for tenant properties? How much should you put down? Because here's one thing I would say: if you're putting enough down on your down payment to just become cash flow, like break even, you might get into a situation where it becomes an alligator property and you're paying more than what the property is generating in income. So how do you think about that with rental properties? In how much should you put down, how you get the money to work for you, but
Yeah.
also semi being conservative, knowing we should be socially responsible and fiscally
Yeah.
responsible.
This is a great question. How much to put down? I mean, clearly, I've known people and probably have been in the situation myself where I thought I was being really smart, put a minimal amount down on a property, and then was like, oh, great. A water heater went out. Or we had one client who was like, I've got a $10,000 bill coming because the sewer line crumbled between the house and the street, you know, and that
Oh my
apparently is
gosh.
on the land, the owner.
The owner.
And then it becomes an alligator property where you're like, geez, how am I going to swing this? Shred really is helpful in a situation like this because of how we function and use the line of credit. So
Okay.
for us, a line like if somebody has four or five properties, Dana, maybe even up to 20 doors, right? If they have a business line of credit that they're using and they're funneling their business income through that business line to either blast away some of the mortgages, uses a line that they're using just for, you know, for tenant improvements and that kind of stuff, you could do that. And it would sort of offset that fear of, oh my gosh, what happens when something dramatic goes down? My hope would be that everyone out there investing does have some discretionary, you know, there's profit coming in every single month because we definitely want to make sure these are cash flow positive. And then it's using whatever you are cash flow positive every month to make sure we're using in the most efficient manner, which the software tells you, you know, how to use those funds.
Okay, great. Sounds good. Then what are some of the biggest success stories you've seen? Like, where did people, so those listening can relate, where did people start and where did they end up? And what are the specific details of exactly they did to help with the shred method, or
Yeah.
to help utilize, I should say, the shred method?
Sure. There are two or three that come to mind right away. What we often find is that folks that have relatively high income, and maybe they're investing in a handful of things, they're functioning and operating on the debt is normal, natural, and good mindset. So for no real reason, they have three or four car loans. They've got you know, a mortgage on their primary, a mortgage on a lake home, three or four mortgages on rental properties. They've got a decent amount of discretionary income every month. And when I get in, dig into their scenario, I'm often at, like, I'm struck with this question of why are you doing this? You know, you could blast away a bunch of these and not have the payments and not pay the interest. So what's the point? You know, what are you trying to do? So one of my clients, he had four car loans, loan on the primary, loan on a lake home. He had a fourplex that he was paying on. And when we plugged all of his data into Shred, Dana, he was done. All properties paid off, all car loans paid off, everything in about 3.7 years. Now, he was making a really, really good income, but a lot of it was just being pooled into these buckets of savings that were like, you know, some people call them sinking funds, but he had a fund for future car repairs, and he had a fund for home reno, and he had a fund for future vacations, and he had a fund for this and a fund for that. And as I started digging into it, I'm like, dude, this is so inefficient. You have all this discretionary income. You're pulling them into buckets, making at the time it was 0.5% maybe. And you're doing it because it makes you feel safe and secure. But what if we could claw back 50 or 60 grand a year in interest that you're paying to the banks right now? Would that be better? And he's like, absolutely. So
Yeah.
when we ran his numbers, all of it gone in 3.7 years, and now he's stroking checks in the $100,000 and $200,000 mark for investments where he's getting into syndications and, you know, multifamily deals, but he's got it liquid to do so. He's not necessarily having to go borrow those funds. So that's one example. And another one that
One
comes to mind,
question, that comes up on that. Leasing cars or versus owning cars. I've always bought a car outright with cash. I've never had a loan on a car. I've also never leased a car, but I've actually considered thinking about leasing a car. And what are your thoughts there?
I think leasing a car makes sense if you're doing it through a business. So if
Okay.
you've got a number of properties owned by an LLC and you need a truck, go lease a truck, you know, through the company if you want to do that. Or, you know, if we're buying it, obviously a Section 179 deduction kind of comes into play there where you can write off the entire cost of the vehicle so long as it's over 6,000 gross vehicle weight. Obviously consult your tax professional, but these are the kinds of decisions that I will often have a conversation with someone about. But I think leasing makes sense if you're having the business pay the lease payment. between you and me, I function like you do. We've always just stroked a check for vehicles because I'd just rather not have the payment.
Okay, great. Sorry, didn't mean to interrupt. We want to hear the next story.
Oh, all good. So the other story that comes to mind is we had a client who, they had a primary mortgage. It was about $350,000, had made decent income, had a couple of car payments, and when we started showing them Shred, they knocked out both cars right away. They started going after their primary mortgage, paid it down to about half of where it was, recast it to make a much smaller payment, and then we're like, okay, we have all this extra money. What do we do? Their dream had always been to own a condo in Florida that would be like a vacation property for them. So they bought one in the Keys, turned it into an Airbnb, and that property has covered itself 95% debt service coverage. And now they're shredding that as well. So they'll have it paid down or off, within a year or two. And their plan is, we're just going to do this every year. We're going to buy a new condo. And within 5 or 6 years, they'll have vacation properties all over the US that just become the places they go for themselves. So it's been cool to watch people realize, oh, this is possible when our money is actually used to go build our net worth, not build the asset base of a bank, right? Because our loans are their assets. We technically are their compound interest vehicle.
I love that. I love that. And it's what I love about it is you took the two stories, someone having these funds put away for vacations and all of these just in case rainy day funds, and provided a much better strategy. And then in your second case, you're like, well, you still can have those vacations. There's just a more strategic way to do it
Totally.
and to invest. And I think that is the beauty of real estate investing. And also, I mean, we're in the long-term space, but personally, I think on the short-term side that you can have the best of both worlds of making something that generates money for you every month and still get the lifestyle you want. Adam, this has been so insightful, everything from interest rate arbitrage to recasting. If the listeners wanted to reach out to you to learn more, how can they do that?
Yeah, thank you for asking. Theshredmethod.com is our website. And to be frank, Dana, if you go to the site, you could spend 2 minutes on our savings calculator plugging in some raw data, and it will spit out, here's how fast you could be out of debt, here's how much interest you would save. And just for what it's worth to your listeners, it may not be the goal to be completely, debt-free. It might not be at zero. We maintain that most people don't have an income problem, they have a liquidity problem, and we help solve that liquidity problem for them to go do more deals. We're just doing it in a much more structured manner. So theshredmethod.com, do the calculator, watch a master class there if you like, and then we have coaches kind of standing by that are always willing to do a 20-minute call with folks and say, plug your numbers in, here's what it looks like, this is what's possible. And we just love helping people figure out how to make their money more efficient.
This is awesome. Well, thank you so much, Adam. I hope the listeners here learned as much as I did today, and we'll see you for the next episode of the Hemling Hustle.